He did have a good imagination. He closed his eyes, remembered how the gusts of wind dispersed those birds right before he and Mama had gone underground. The cardinal man, gone in a snap. The boy's smile abandoned him. He looked down from his box perch. Mama, what is this place? Far as I recall, she just say we in Bell Haven. Why she say they paint some of the trees yellow? She shrugged. I'm long past dwelling on the whys of the white mind, boy. But I'm not. He could smell the ocean from there, saltwater marshes and tidal swamps. Lady said something about the Charleston Peninsula and two rivers. I've never heard of Bellhaven in all my months of book learning. Thunder rumbled outside, distant and then close. Too fast for thunder. The boy's mama stepped away from the crates. Horse hooves. The ground vibrated. The music quieted upstairs and the folk stopped dancing. The boy climbed down from the crates and approached the lone window half sunk in the ground. The glass was mud-smeared and concealed by azalea bushes fixing to bloom. He pulled an old stool under the window and balanced himself on top, his eyes just high enough to see horse hooves, white cloaks, and torches outside. They found us, Mama. Chapter 1, 1920, Bellhaven, South Carolina. It was as good a day to die as any. But first, Ellsworth Newberry would have his morning cup of joe. He poured it from a dented pot, inhaled the earthy roast, and swirled in a finger's worth of medicinal whiskey. He'd begun stashing liquor the day the 18th Amendment was ratified, a good year before Prohibition actually began, but as long as Dr. Philpott continued drying scraps for his bum leg, there was no reason to start using his stash of Old Sam. Whoever found his body could have what he'd hoarded. He braced himself against the stove and took a step on his new wooden leg, a so-called hanger limb, named after the man who designed it. If old Hanger had any sense, he'd have made it so the knee would bend. Leather attachments connected the leg to the stump above where his left knee used to be, and the leather pads on the heel and ball of the foot were prone to make him trip. "You'll need those pads for traction," the military doc had said. "Soon won't be needing the leg for anything." Ellsworth used his cane into the living room, where his chair waited by the bay window. He dropped down on the wooden seat and unholstered the Smith & Wesson on the window ledge next to last night's dinner plate. Remnants of beef stew had hardened around the edges. He nudged the plate aside to make room for his coffee mug, and then watched out the window. Across the road, the facade of the town hall lay in rubble. Built by his late father, the building had once been the focal point of the town square, with sash windows and tall brick walls painted blue, eaves trimmed white to match the wraparound veranda that enclosed it all like a warm hug. Now the interior walls were visible, flame scorched from the fire that had killed Bellhaven's soul and Ellsworth's wife. The avenue of oaks was still there, though. Eliza once thought them magical, the way the Spanish moss draped their sprawling limbs, swaying in the coastal breeze and shimmering silver in sunlight. The live oaks overhung the road into town like a vault, evenly spaced on both sides for more than 100 yards. "It's like a perfect tunnel," Eliza had said on their wedding day, nestling the top of her head into the pocket of Ellsworth's shoulder as he steered their new Model T over the bumpy gravel. "Like driving under a dream." What was it he'd said in response? "I reckon so." She glanced at him before repositioning her head against his shoulder. A flicker of disappointment in those blue eyes. Breeze from the open windows moved strands of auburn hair against his cheek. Sometimes he could still feel the tickle. Ellsworth moved hair that wasn't there, wishing now he'd said something different back then, something less dismissive than "I reckon so." But the truth was, he'd been distracted by the rose blossom scent of her hair, the puttering of the car engine, and the mockingbird trying to keep pace next to his window. That brief look she'd given him had been the first sign of her melancholy, what many in town referred to as her madness. Instead of her smile, he now saw chiggers and rat snakes, boll weevils munching through cotton scabs, a long-abandoned town hall where coons lived in the attic, bats hung from rafters, and egret droppings covered the floorboards. Sea breezes passed through the broken windows like nothing of import had ever transpired in there. No festivals or potlucks, holiday gatherings or birthday parties, talent shows or theatrical plays. The music and singing had been something of wonder. Without it, the town's heart thumped slowly.